Welcome to Jump Podcast. I'm your host, Traveling Jackie, and I'm here to explore travel, adventure, and lifestyle in ways meant to motivate you to move and experience the world outside your comfort zone and to do big, courageous things with your one life. Let this show be a source of advice and inspiration, and remember that in the end, it's you who takes the leap. We're so grateful to Oboz Footwear and Osprey Packs for partnering with us and supporting the podcast, so please stay tuned for more about them later on.
Okay, well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. You're currently tuning into a call that is taking place across oceans and many time zones. It is just about sunrise here in Montana, and with me all the way from over in Norway is none other than my good friend Jason Moore from Zero to Travel podcast. Jason, welcome back to the show. It's been a minute.
Thank you. It's been a few minutes, not since we've seen each other. I don't know if you saw anybody watching video. I was doing the Happy Hands Club thing. Like every time you were saying something, I was trying to illustrate that point with my hands just to bring the entertainment value. We've been friends for a long time, but it's been a long time since we've been podcasting together.
Yeah, I actually just checked and it has been 6 years since you were last on the show. So it's always great to have you. And like you said, you're here for several reasons. One is that we finally just met in person in North. I know.
Yes, it took long enough.
I know.
We have been having like these in-depth sort of conversations as friends, you know, at least a couple times a year. We'll like check in like, oh, what's going on? A bit of entrepreneurial therapy sometimes, podcast therapy, some travel talk mixed in. And I think we're like, well, we finally got to meet in person and we have a lot to catch up on. This is the perfect time. And then why not, instead of just doing our normal call, let's just like do our thing, but just record it and put it out there. So
exactly. I think that maybe this conversation will be a little more interesting than the ones we normally have, since they're very heavily focused on business and podcasting most of the time.
True.
This time we're going to talk about Norway, what you're doing there. We're going to talk about the fact that this girl right here, who has like a massive phobia of heights, just climbed a Via Ferrata on the highest sea cliff in Europe, which still blows my mind. And I really, really want to share about that and can't wait to like get into the psychology of it and what was happening like inside my head and my heart as I'm climbing this cliff with total exposure and wind and rain and like, I don't know. That's going to be exciting to like, I don't know, kind of dig into a little bit. And then of course, some destination things.
Yeah, that's a long time to have to keep it together on this story you're going to share. I mean, well, we can get into the details, but yeah, I am also going to pick your brain because you have been traveling for so long as an individual, just like a traveler out there in the world, but then also running these tours to different countries and doing the digital nomad thing and all the traveling you've done. So I did want to hear your, say, three all-time best places to spend 3 months or more, let's say. Of course, this list can change at any moment, but you know, where it's at right now, how you feel today, because I always love to get some destination recommendations from trusted travelers who have good taste. I'm putting you in that category.
Thank you. That's such a fun question. I'm going to have to think about that as we chat here. Are you talking about like digital nomad style, like where to just go and set up for a few months?
I'm going to leave it open.
All right, cool. I'm excited about that. So why don't we start with, let's see. We've known each other almost 10 years, maybe 10 years.
Yeah.
We started podcasting right around the same time. And it has taken this long for us to be in the same, well, not right now, but physical place, getting to hang out in Norway. So let's remind everyone real quick, if they don't know who you are, because I mean, maybe they've heard you on your own show. Maybe they've been listening here for a while and have, you know, heard you on this podcast. But why don't you just start by sharing a little bit about who you are and why you're in Norway?
I can do that. I'll keep it short. You know, you got to be really careful when you give the podcaster the mic and the floor, because we do know how to talk. We know how to listen, but we also know how to talk. Now, I will say, yeah, before I just give you the sort of elevator version of my story, I will say what a great moment it was when I turned the corner at the place we met up in Oslo, where I live, and saw you standing there, meeting for the first time in 10 years of like sort of, you know how it is in this online world. Like you can actually develop real relationships with people. And there's been so many times we've almost crossed paths. And then finally, like kind of getting to turn the corner and see you there. And then you came and had dinner with had the in-laws in town. So you braved that whole thing. And no, it was just awesome. So I just want to, before I share, I just want to say here, thank you for your friendship. And I really appreciate that you are a presence in my life. And it's just been awesome getting to know you over the years. So I'll end all this happy stuff now.
That. Oh, that's so sweet, though. I feel the same way. You know we're on the same page on that. So thank you,
awesome.
Though. I appreciate that.
Yeah, so long story short, you know, coming out of college, I had like $20,000 in debt, dreamed to see the world, no idea how to do it. Ended up figuring out, if I like can work jobs that require me to travel, then I can travel and make money and pay off my debt and do all the things. And so long story short, that ended up into like a 10-plus year career as a touring professional. So I drove all these wacky tour vehicles. Like the most infamous one I'd say was the Meow Mixmobile. It looks like a giant cat with whiskers, like think Dumb and Dumber, you know, driving around the United States. So we do all these wacky promotions, ended up like tour managing a band, doing like the whole music touring thing. Anyway, it was like a way that I was able to see the world, make money, and then also traveling to different countries in between, and lived a nomadic lifestyle for over 10 years as a nomad. And now at the time, I just thought I was kind of like, my friends are climbing the career ladder and all this stuff. And I'm just this guy who's a nomad following his, you know, passion for travel. And I just kept saying yes to travel. And I didn't know being a nomad would actually be a skill that would pay off later on. So when I started the podcast, Zero to Travel, that you alluded to, you know, really, there's a whole bunch of stuff that happened in between. But the intention with the podcast, just like, you know, with your work, and I think we share a lot of these, we have these like-minded values, was really to just create a resource that I wish I had when I was coming up and trying to figure out this whole travel thing. And to me, that meant having in-depth conversations with other people about the different ways that you can travel the world and sharing that. And podcasting was such a great way to share that. Being, I thought about all of the conversations I had in hostels and with travelers and locals, just like, wow, people need to hear this stuff. So that was really at the heart of the show. It wasn't like I didn't start it to have a business or for it to be the marketing arm of my, you know, new brand or whatever. It was literally just, hey, I want to make this thing that can help people travel. And, you know, here we are 12 years later, and I'm thankful to say it's been able to do that to some degree, which I'm super grateful for.
And probably more than you can even imagine. This is what we learn, right?
I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to know these things. You kind of just believe in the ripple effect and hope that that's a thing. I met my wife and ended up in Norway. I was traveling in Brazil, of all places. Met her in a hostel. I'd say this is like one of those examples of hostel love gone too far, perhaps. You know, a hostel encounter
like gone right.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm kidding a bit, but we met in a hostel. I to me, when I meet somebody in a hostel, they're already checking like a lot of boxes for me. I'm like, they're cool enough to like deal with a dirty shower and, you know, loud roommates and all that kind of stuff. They're probably a pretty like salt of the earth kind of person if they can tolerate this environment, right? So long story short, we reconnected. It was a very short period of time. We got to know each other and then we went our separate ways, and then we reconnected like 4 years later in New York City. Realized, like that thing from 4 years ago, there was something there and it's real. And then fast forward to now, I'm a Norwegian citizen. I live in Oslo. We have two kids.
Cool.
And that's just what happens, I guess, sometimes when you travel. You never know where it'll take you in life.
I always say you never know who you're going to meet around the next corner. Like, that's like an encouraging thing for me to remember, because I've just met the coolest people. You just never know. You never know who's going to be in that next hostel or next to you at the beach or on trail or whatever it is. And I mean, your story just unfolds with these encounters with people out there. It's just And yours is so neat. Getting to see it now firsthand in Norway, it's been neat to like listen to you talk about it for the last years, but actually to go witness it was, it blew my mind. You live way cooler than I even imagined.
Yeah. It was a tough decision when we knew we were going to have our daughter. When we found out, we had not picked a place to live yet, actually. And it was a critical point. And then I realized right in that moment, for better or worse, those of you listening some of you may disagree, but we felt that Norway was going to be the better place to raise our children. And I grew up in the States, so I had that upbringing experience. Now it's a different place. Every place changes over time. But I just thought, for now, it felt like this was the place we wanted to do it. And thankfully, Jackie, and you know this, like, without all the travel experience, I'm not sure, if I could have mentally handled a move abroad like this in some ways. It can be very challenging, living in another culture, learning another language, adapting. Even for somebody who's been around and somewhat of a quote-unquote seasoned traveler, still many challenges. And the same challenges you would have moving to a new city or whatever, but when you move to another country, after that sort of initial buzz and newness wears off and you've been through the traditions for 2 or 3 years, you're just like, oh, okay, this is my life now and I'm far from home and, I have to get used to this culture, this environment, and how much of my own culture do I bring into this, when I'm interacting, and all these sort of things that come up on the daily. So it's, not always easy, but nothing is easy, right? This is the choice we made, and it's led to, like you said, we have a pretty sweet life here, I would say. And, try to show up every day with that positive attitude as much as possible, even when the Norwegian weather tries to suck it out of you. But
yeah. No, it's beautiful, I think, what you've created. And I think about that, in kind of the terms that you just laid out, just having... it's like you've left everything that you grew up with behind, essentially, to create a new life in a new place. And with that comes a certain amount of, culture shock, which can come and go. It's like it can come in phases, right? And then also you are in your family, your kids speak both. Are they more than bilingual? Are they trilingual or are they just?
No, they are bilingual.
Okay. But they're fully bilingual. They speak English with you and they speak Norwegian with their mother. And so they have this dual world, which is amazing to bring the kids up with English. But then it leaves you. You're the only one in your family that like comes from this other place. Like your in-laws were there and I got to witness like what this must feel like for you to be like, you had to learn Norwegian. You wouldn't be able to speak with your in-laws as well if you didn't speak Norwegian, and sitting around that dinner table with you. And it's like, wow, you're the only one here who's like on team Jason. Like, there we go. Like, I got to do this or else kind of thing. Everyone around you, like they're all Norwegian. And for as much as you've become part of the culture, like that's a beautiful thing. But also that's really hard to just uproot and set down roots somewhere else and have to build everything, have to build those roots, create that lifestyle and create that new sort of comfort zone that you live in. But you have a really, really amazing place that you've done it. I think the thing that stood out to me the most, maybe, and then there are a couple of things meeting your family that stood out to me that I'll just share if that's all right.
I'd love to hear. Yeah, this is interesting because this was a few weeks ago now. Mm-hmm. Or maybe a month ago, and now I get to hear your sort of take on it, reflecting back. It's interesting, because we haven't really talked about it.
No, we haven't. We haven't connected since I was last there. It was just a few weeks ago. It was 3 weeks ago. I grew up in the woods. I grew up in an A-frame in the Sierras, close to Tahoe. Well, in Tahoe. I don't know what I'm saying. West shore of Lake Tahoe in California, and like at the back of a neighborhood up a mountain, like uphill both ways kind of thing. And out our back door, we were the last block. And so we just had national forest behind us, and we would go out there and my brother and I would spend time in the woods and build forts in the trees. And I mean, we knew when we needed to be back for dinner or whatever, you know, but like we grew up outside. And I feel like more and more, like those opportunities are kind of diminishing, like in today's world. But it depends on where you live. And I understand that, because if you live where there's access to forest, you know, your kids are going to grow up outside in the forest. And looking at where you live, this is Oslo. We're talking, first of all, Oslo was, I will say, way cooler than I expected, because I'm not a city person. But Oslo didn't feel like a big city, kind of just felt like a big neighborhood almost. And I love that. Like, to me, the big cities that I'm not so enamored with are the tall ones, you know, with the skyscrapers, and you can't see the sky. Like, I need my open sky. And Oslo has that. But you live like outside of the city, just a short metro ride, and right out your back door is this gorgeous forest with a pond and trails. And I mean, your kids get to roam and explore. You don't have fences. Neither did I. Like, you live close with your neighbors. That is one difference, I guess. In Tahoe, like, every other house was a vacation home. And so, like, we didn't have a lot of kids on our block, but we had a few, and we would find them, you know. But your kids get to grow up just in this environment where they're free to roam. And I think that that's, I mean, it definitely made me, it definitely had an impact on who I am now, the way that I was raised outside. I call it free range. Like, I was raised free range in the mountains, you know. Mm-hmm. No fences, and just able to go and explore. And I can see that in your kids. I mean, we went for a walk with them down or up, whatever, over to that pond, and they just like disappeared into the trees for a minute. You're like, well, they know where they're going. Okay, sweet. Yeah. Like, this is just like how I was. Like, and I love that. I love that for your kids. I love that for your family. Like, I think that that's what we need.
We love it too. Yeah, there's the Norwegian concept of friluftsliv. I'm sure you talked about it when you were on your trip. The like fresh air life, being outside, it's a huge value here. And it was definitely one of the things that drew us, or at least drew me here. And, you know, having nature nearby, I think, yeah, I mean, sometimes with kids just go off, we're like, oh, I hope they, you know, we'll get back before it's dark. I don't know. You know, no, we keep tabs on them. But it's, you know, for practical purposes, I always like to give some actionable takeaways in episodes like this. And we did, when we were looking at moving out of the apartment we had in Oslo, because we were living in like a 2-bedroom apartment with two kids that was 52 square meters, which is basically like 600 square feet. It was, you know, it was pretty cramped. We're like, we need to get out. And we, you know, just made a checklist of the things that we wanted. And my wife grew up in the countryside in Norway. And I grew up near, it was a small patch of forest in suburban Philadelphia, and it was next to a highway, but it was still a forest that I got to play in all the time. And we just wanted to be near some nature, you know? So we just like kind of filled out. I always encourage people, like, you know, the whole lifestyle design thing, right? That ties in with any, you know, people that want to live the travel lifestyle, even for a period of time, just like making a simple checklist of kind of figuring out what are the things I actually value right now. And, you know, maybe I can't hit all of these checkpoints, but what are the most important ones? And can I find a situation that is aligned with my values? And for us, this place in Norway certainly checked those boxes. We, like you mentioned, like having relationships with the neighbors, having the access where the kids can just run out and they can explore, and we don't have to worry about them getting run over by a car or something like that because of the forest and sort of the situation here. It just checked a lot of boxes for us. So when this spot came up, we already kind of knew from a lifestyle perspective what we wanted. And then we were able to pull the trigger pretty quickly. So I like that reverse engineering of lifestyle first, and then find the situation that matches as much of that as you can. There's no perfect place, I don't think, but yeah.
Yeah. I use the same thing, actually, when I look for those destinations that we're going to talk about at the end, those 3-month worthy places to go hang for a while. That's absolutely what I do. I know what I like. I know where I thrive. I know what I need. And within that criteria is where I start looking, you know, sometimes just in my head, like all over the world, like where are these places? Sometimes I look on a map, to try and find them. But yeah, I think it's something that I almost think is, I know that most people would like to do that, would like to live in a place that they, you know, that sounds good to them, whatever. It checks all these boxes. I think a lot of people follow their families. They follow jobs. Sure. And they follow things that maybe aren't, or they follow a person, you know, which is, it's fine. Like opportunities are opportunities and you know, priorities are priorities. But in my case and in your case, you know, we have the privilege to take ourselves to a place where those boxes are checked for us. And
yeah, no, totally. I understand that and acknowledge it. I mean, I'm one of those people that, you know, I'm here for my family. We had to pick a place to live and this is where this side of the family's from. And, you know, sometimes in the winter, it's not, I just want to be at the beach somewhere or somewhere, yeah, you know, south, sure, in Europe.
I mean, but, me too. Hello, Montana. You know,
yeah, you try to check as many boxes as you can,
yeah,
right? Given your situation. And, yeah, you know, there are all sorts of factors. But, yeah, well, I wanted to hear your impressions of Norway because you came through as a traveler and then you're always going to get the sort of meta perspective of the culture from the outside looking in. And then you had this incredible experience where you were overcoming some of your fears and, yeah, somebody that is, yes, I guess I would say you're somebody that I would consider is often out of their comfort zone, getting way further out of their comfort zone, if that was even possible. I didn't know, but yes, I want to hear about that first. I mean, do you mind if I turn the tables a little bit?
No, not okay at all. Please.
Your impressions of Norway, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's preface this with, you know, how long you were here. And of course, it's impossible soak in an entire culture in a few weeks' time or whatever. But
because I think I was only there for just under 2 weeks. So, I mean, that's, let's take everything with a grain of salt because, you know, 2 weeks is not nearly enough to experience a place. I mean, you've been there for years and I'm sure you're still learning things. So, however, it is enough for first impressions because you can only get that really the first time around.
Yeah.
When you visit a place. And so, yeah, Norway was high on my list for a long time, which is why I created this trip here, there. Where am I? And invited some people to go with me. And in true Jackie fashion, I wanted adventure. And so we hit some trails, we got on bikes, we did the Via Ferrata, we kayak camped, we went out to, I'm going to get tested here with names because, wow, Norwegian. But we kayaked out to a wild camping spot and set up for the night and cooked dinner, had a campfire, watched the sun go down. And, you know, actually we didn't. We did kind of watch the sun go down, but it never really disappeared. And I will say this was amazing. It was late May that I was there. And I never once saw the dark sky in Norway. I never saw nighttime just because of, you know, how far north we were. And the fact that I think it's only dark from like midnight to 3 or so a.m. at that time of year. And so, I mean, I had brought a headlamp, didn't even touch it. You know, I mean, it's more like, okay, this is where we put on our eye masks and try and sleep at night. But yeah, that's just a fun kind of phenomenon to experience as a human is the midnight sun or the very, very late, very, very late sun.
It's the sun will just sort of dance along the horizon, but
yeah,
not really.
Yeah. Yeah, like you still get some kind of sunsetty things happening, but I just wasn't awake late enough to actually see it set. So
I'll wake up at 4 a.m. sometimes, Jackie, and it'll just be, I'm like, all right, I think I'm rested. Wait, is it morning? I'm not really sure. I'm still tired. I'll either be grateful that it's 4 a.m. or be like, oh no, it's only 4 a.m. and the sun is shining in a way. I feel like, yeah, I still got to get a little more sleepier.
I'm not done sleeping. Yeah. That is a wild experience.
Yeah.
Okay. So right off the bat, the things that I noticed about Norway, I mean, just even flying in. So we started in Bergen and we went up north from Bergen. So if you look at a map of Norway, Bergen is way out on the west coast, kind of like almost, it's almost like directly west of Oslo. Like if you were to draw a line, I think something like that. And there are, I mean, I don't even know how many thousands of islands Norway has. There's a lot of coastline and it's moody up there. I mean, it's like you get so far north, there's crazy weather. You guys have all of the weather. They say it's very similar to Patagonia, actually, because, and of course, I'm comparing this to a place that I know. But they say you get all four seasons in one day. You know, that's exactly like Patagonia. I'm used to the wind, rain, sunshine, whatever it is, all within the course of 5 minutes. So, and that felt good to me. It's like, oh, I know this. This is like at the far ends of the earth, like you kind of are up for the wild weather. It's part of the experience. But you know what comes with rain is rainbows. The rainbow, like the air is so clear. The rainbows were so vibrant. I mean, there was so much, there was so much color and so much life, and which is almost surprising because it was so remote, the places that we went. And this was one of the cool things about our experience was that the places that we decided to go, like where I created this itinerary, were a lot of them were really off the beaten path. I mean, just out there. We didn't see other tourists. Like we met some locals. Like we were on our own a lot. But we were in these small islands north of Bergen. I mean, we got out of there and just went into like the backwoods of Norway. But what I loved about that, and this is what we learned, is that this is like the real Norway. This is where the real Norway happens, because there's so many things I want to say right now. So these little islands are serviced by public transportation. Mind blowing. Because this public transportation are they're boats, and every little what do you call it? A place where somebody lives, like some established residence of sorts. Even if it's on some remote island by itself, it will have a ferry service twice a day. The Norwegian government offers that. It is all subsidized. Like it is part of the effort for Norwegians to stick to their roots and live out there where they wanted to live, where they live. And so you have these cities like Bergen is, again, just like a big neighborhood. These cities aren't huge. They're not overwhelming. They're like gorgeous and easily walkable. And there's water everywhere and mountains. And yet you can get out to these little islands and there's still people there. I mean, yes, it's remote and sometimes you see nothing and then you'll see someone living and it's like, wow, they actually live there full time, year round. Like this person stays right there, like on this fjord near this massive waterfall. Oh, and here's the ferry coming to see if they need a ride. You know, it's just so neat. I mean, that blew my mind. I think that was probably the most impressive maybe thing about all of Norway is how it functions, how you can be out there in the wild and yet still have access when you need it to civilization, to resources, whatever it is. I thought that was really, really well done. And that is not normal. Not normal
yeah,
at all.
That's interesting to hear. Yeah, I don't know if all those ferry schedules are maintained through the winter when the weather's crazy, but the idea that the core idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Subsidize the public transport. I mean, we can take ferries out to the islands here in Oslo. It's a popular thing to do in camp and stuff. 5.5 million people in Norway. So you get a lot of space. I like that. You don't feel crowded with people. But I'm always fascinated when you come across that person that lives in a place like that, like some village on some remote island. And I have to say, as a Norwegian citizen and resident, it is very tempting sometimes, Jackie, to entertain the idea of being one of those people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, what would that be? Mm. Because there are some beautiful places in Norway. People think of Norway as notoriously expensive. We can talk about that. But it's very affordable if you live in some of these. You can live in some beautiful nature areas because there's so much beautiful nature and the weather might be crazy. But you can live near beautiful nature pretty affordably. You might be, you know, an hour from the closest grocery store or something. But I'm always intrigued by that lifestyle. I'm like, would I be able to...
to actually do it?
To hack it, yeah.
Well, I do think that those ferries do go all year round. I think the only time that they wouldn't is if the water's too high, like if the seas are rough, you know, if they just can't get through. So, because that is, I think that's the promise. That's like Norway's promise to its people. It's like, go there. We will come to you. Mm. It's so neat.
Yeah. It's wonderful, the access. Yeah.
Yeah. And also there was a piece of, we were on one of these tiny islands staying at a guest place where you're kind of self-supported, like no one's there to run it. So our guide was cooking us and we helped out cooking dinner and stuff like that. And we learned that on that island, there were a lot of people who had always, like, I guess they'd always been there or their families were there. And if you come in as a newcomer, like it's hard to do because then you have to get in with the people who are there. Like, I guess Norwegians, and I've heard you say this, like Norwegians are nice once you get to know them, you know, and I think maybe they just have their ways. They have their traditions. Like they live out there on their islands. Like don't abuse that, you know, and respect the people who are out there and have been there for generations. And maybe they still hang cod, like dry cod, and like do have their fishing boats and all of that. And that's how they live. And only if you are ready to accept that sort of lifestyle should you even be a person who lives out there, you know. And I think you probably should be retired. It's like there aren't jobs, you know. Like there was a grocery store on this tiny island that same island, and it was a self-service grocery store. And I just, like, I don't remember the last time I've seen that. I have seen it before. I couldn't tell you where or when it was because it's been that long that I've seen a self-service grocery store. I mean, it locks at a certain time of day. The beer fridge gets locked at a certain time of day, you know, and you go in and you check yourself out with your items. And there's like a little cafe attached. So a little gathering space with some tables and like a microwave, you know, like you could come and hang out if you want to. And there were a couple of locals that were in that little cafe when we went into the store to just, you know, see what they had. I think we all came out with ice cream or something. But it was
also typical Norwegian. Going for some ice cream. Going to the little boutique for some ice cream.
Nice.
Yeah, the boutique is store in Norwegian. Sorry. Maybe you're referring to the DNT, if it was a DNT cab, and DNT.no, something people should check out if they're coming to Norway. It's the Norwegian Trekking Association. In Norwegian, it's Den Norske Turistforening. And they have these cabins and things like that. Some of them are manned, some of them are self-serve. And, you know, you could go and plan hikes and, you know, get use of these cabins. And it's like a whole nonprofit association for hiking and outdoor activities, and these cabins are scattered throughout the country. But I want to just say kudos to you for, you know, and I will say there are so many quote unquote Instagrammable places in Norway, and people have probably seen them, and I've been to many of them in these outdoor areas where, you know, you hike and you can stand on this rock that's wedged between this cliff that's, you know, 1,000 feet over a fjord, or these places, and they're iconic, but man, are they packed. So the fact that you were, you know, on these islands seeing, you know, two random locals sipping their coffee in some self-serve store. I mean, that's, like you said, that's the real, like, get out there and, you know, be in these isolated areas. And I mean, you really can't go wrong with the beauty. You can go to the Instagrammable places, but you might find a little more, you'll find beauty and magic, but you might find a little extra bit of magic if you do what Jackie is describing.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I specifically, when I was designing this itinerary, I specifically said the words, I do not want to go there. We're talking about Trolltunga, you know, which is the, you know what it is.
Yeah.
It's the overhanging rock. It's probably above some fjord somewhere. I don't even know where it is on a map. I just said specifically, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go where everybody else is. I mean, sometimes you got to do that and go see the pretty thing. And there's a reason we go to those places. But there's a reason we go to the other places too. And you're right. There is a magic there that most people don't ever get to discover. And so that was what we were after. And I do think that we found it for sure.
Nice.
And then, oh man, talking about getting out of the comfort zone. This is something I love. This is something I love to talk about. Sometimes I think that, you know, I've been on the road traveling internationally, living abroad, learning languages. I've been in the minority situation where, you know, nobody looks like me and I'm speaking a foreign language. And this is why I'm here. Like I've put myself out of my comfort zone for a long time. And it's an interesting thing to have kind of a scale of like, what is outside of my comfort zone? What's hard for me still after all these years, you know? And it's not going to look at all the same as the person next to me. And this is one of the beauties of getting a group trip together, especially where it's multi-sport, like this one we did in Norway, where sometimes hiking is the hard thing for someone. Maybe they're not, you know, they've just started hiking, like that, getting a backpack on and going for a long hike. Wow, like that, or even a technical hike, like that's something they're not used to. They're pushing themselves. They're super accomplished. Getting on a bike, you know, it's not something that they're used to. For me, I've been doing these things for so long that it's easy to forget that can be hard for someone else, you know, and to remember the courage that it takes to get on that bike again and pedal after you've been struggling with it, you know. And so I think that climbing that Via Ferrata for me put me right back in that place where it was my turn to really catapult myself outside of my comfort zone. And that, I mean, that is a thing I definitely want to spend some time talking about.
Well, yeah. Can we get into it now? Because first,
yeah.
let me, yeah, I have some questions around this because okay. I want you to paint the picture a little bit more from
okay.
the inner yeah. picture and the outer picture. So first, for the outer picture, just for the uninitiated, can you explain what a Via Ferrata is so people understand what you were staring at, considering doing or not doing?
Yes. So Via Ferrata means Iron Way in Italian.
Sounds relaxing.
It is anything but relaxing. They originally started building them as escape routes in the Alps in northern Italy during the war. And so that is why there's a lot of them in the Dolomites, in the Tyrol region of Italy, Austria, in that region. Mm-hmm. And I have done one in there, which is gorgeous. But there are so many, and they're part of the climbing route. So what the Iron Way, the Via Ferrata is essentially, it is a climbing route. And the difference between rock climbing and Via Ferrata is with rock climbing, you're setting your own anchors. You're bringing your own everything. Generally the rock face is empty, blank. And you're the one finding the cracks and setting your anchors and getting yourself up that way. The Via Ferrata has been essentially structured for you. So it's drill, like pieces of iron, of rebar, ladders, cables drilled into the rocks so that it creates a way forward for you. And there's a cable. There's always a cable. A big, you know, steel braided cables that are drilled into the rocks that you clip into. So you get a harness, a climbing harness, and you get two, you always have two carabiners so that one can always be clipped on while you're moving the other one. And you can move along this climbing route by stepping on these, you know, the rebar, the little pedal steps that are drilled into the rock for you, and then dragging your looped carabiner through this steel cable that's on the rock with you along the way. So your risk of falling is, I mean, only if you were to completely detach yourself, could you let go of everything, could you actually fall, like similar to rock climbing. But the sure. idea is that you're always attached to the cable. That's why you have two carabiners on your ropes that are attached to you. You're always attached. And so it gives a way to those of us who, well, don't climb, a way up a cliff. Essentially, that's what it is, or over or through. And you can do these Via Ferratas for sport, essentially, for entertainment. Imagine that. For fun, even.
Well, we'll answer the question at the end, would you do it again? But first, can you lay out, give us the overview on this one, just the specs, if you will.
Yeah, okay. Well, this one is, I mean, it's in the middle of nowhere in Norway,
What's it called?
It's called Hexavagen, which means the witch's wall. And it's in Hornelen, which I may have not gotten that exactly right. But it is on what's called, what they call Europe's highest sea cliff. So it comes straight up from the water. And the rock just, I mean, it continues to climb. And there's a, if you do the whole climb, I think the whole entire climb takes like a day. We did the first half of it, which is the more common route. And so most Via Ferratas, I should say, have a rating from A to F. I mean, there's a couple different ways that they can be rated, but one of them is A to F. And I have done four before this. This was my fifth one. Always, you know, one thing I'm really good at is facing my fears. It's so scary every time, but I do it. I want to. I push myself. This is me getting out of my comfort zone, right? The ones I've done before have been, so A being the easiest, F being the hardest. I have done a couple of A's and a C, or maybe it was a B that had like some C elements. So that's the closest I've gotten. This one was rated D. So it's right out of the gates. I mean, I knew it was going to be hard. And actually, I wasn't going to do it. I was not going to do it at all. I had been planning this trip for a year and a half, and not one time, I could barely look at the pictures. I mean, I had been shown an Instagram video, and my stomach right now is like nervous, like just thinking about this, right? Like there's just no way that I'm going to be able to do this. I have like a real phobia of heights. I freeze. You know, it's really hard to pull yourself through when that affects you. Anybody out there with a phobia is going to know exactly what I'm talking about. Like it's not something that someone without a phobia can even begin to understand. Like it is crippling. It's debilitating. Like when you get in that moment where the fear overtakes you, wow. And if you are happen to be cabled in a line of people where you have to move, the pressure, the anxiety, the stress of it, it's like, there's no way I'm going to be able to do this Via Ferrata, you know? So like I had basically just written it off this whole time. And because there was an option to do, like there was like a beginning part, like the approach you could do, you could get on the cable. There's a bit of climbing you could do. And then there was a turnaround point where everybody could decide, okay, do we want to keep going or do we turn around and go back the way we came? You climb back out and then you hike, you know, out. And I was thinking, this is going to be me. Like, I'm going to be with that group. I'd like to try it, but I think I'm going to, you know, hike around and meet y'all at the top. So here comes the day that, you know, we're on the trip and it's like, it's the next day. And I just had this feeling of curiosity. It was curiosity. This is the thing that got me, was this question of, I'm getting nervous even just telling this story. Like, what if I did do it? What if I could do this? And that's all it was. This was the thing that like pulled me forward, was this question of what would happen if I do? Yeah, I know what's going to happen if I don't. I'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what happens if I do? You know, and I mean, I wasn't sure. We had 13 people in our group. I thought most people were going to give it a go, going to try it, maybe more than half. In the end, only five of us actually did it. And the way that I got forward, the way that I actually was able to pull myself through and do it is that I just kept saying yes to it. Like, okay, well, I'm not going to write this off. So I've been saying all up until the very night before, like, there's no way. I'm not doing it. But that morning I woke up and I don't know, I had an extra dose of confidence or courage or something was going on that day, because When we got to the place and we're getting ready, I decided to go ahead and suit up in such a way that would set myself up for success. So I wouldn't get to the wall and then not have my rain jacket on already when it starts to sprinkle, you know. So I got on all my rain gear. They had these special gloves that help protect your hands on the cables and such. They were $5. I think it's the cheapest thing in Norway. I was like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and buy those, because if I get to the point where I'm at the, you know, turnaround point and I say I want to go and I don't have the gloves, it's going to be way easier for me to not go. So I'm just going to buy the gloves. It's $5, you know, like buy the gloves, put them on, set myself up for success. And by the time we actually got there and we had already done the approach, I mean, the approach included straight up ladders. You know, we climbed up a bit. We also climbed down and around, which was interesting. The down was actually more, was kind of harder because when you're looking down, you kind of have to look down, you know, and that's part of the fear of the height. And so knowing that, I think that was actually to my disadvantage that like we climbed down during the approach because in my head, I'm thinking, well, I won't have to do this on the way up, you know, and so like maybe it'll be easier. And I mean, the approach I could totally do. And so we got there and I ended up saying yes to it. I decided to go and give it a try. And my stomach is in knots right now. Just putting myself back into that place.
Well, what was your biggest takeaway from the experience? Because it was about a 6-hour round trip thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, the whole thing. I mean, the whole thing.
It's not a small, I just bring that up because it's not a small, it's not like a 30-minute thing. You're out on these cliffs. If you look it up and you could link to it, you will see people like sitting on a bench, you know, looking off the cliff face. I mean, this is just, this isn't like a for the faint of heart.
No, it is. You know what, though? Coming from a person who has a total phobia of heights and did it, I'm going to challenge that statement because I think we are capable of a lot. And sometimes, and we're the first person, we're the first people to tell ourselves no. No one else in my group was telling me no, I couldn't do it. No one else. Everyone else was rooting for me to get through it, to do it. I was the person who would have held me back. I know that, well, when I have decided not to take part in something in the past, it's because I'm the one saying no, not because somebody else is telling me I can't do it. It's me. It's my head. It's my heart saying I can't do this, you know? And so this was me showing up and getting curious and saying, but what if I can? What if I do? And here's what I did. There were a couple of things that helped me get through this. The people that I went with were incredibly encouraging. So there was that. I had support around me, which was very important. One of our guides, we had two guides that took us, the five of us. This was a 2-hour climb. So once we hit the point of they told us there was really never a point of no return. We could have gone down and left during any of it. However, once you get started, you really don't want to turn around. So when we got to that point, they gave us an option. They said, hey, if any of you want to get roped in, so basically on belay, which means, you know, you're someone else has you, an extra rope is attached to you and they're climbing with you. And essentially they just have you on belay. So they basically have you tight the whole time on rope. And I said, you know what? I will do that because that's going to make me feel more supported. It's going to make me feel a little less scared in this moment. And so this big burly guy from Australia, he was wonderful. He put me on belay and he explained every single section that we did to me. He said, you know, we're going to climb this part together. So stay with me, or I'm going to climb this part first, you know, wait for me to get to this point, and then, you know, I'll set up the rope. Like, he's letting the rope go the whole time. So he roped me in and he said, you know, everybody needs a little help sometimes. And it just stayed with me. Cause I'm like, I mean, people look at me. I know that people around me look at me and see me as like the strong, brave one, you know? And like, I mean, it's hard to be in that place and be like, I like that. I want to see that about me too. Right. I want to believe that about me too. But you know what? Put me on this rope right now because I need help. Like I want your help. Like I definitely want to feel the tight rope, you know, helping, just giving me that extra security. And so I said yes to that. So that was a big deal to me, was like saying yes to the extra help. And then also my friend who was climbing right behind me said something about a 3-foot window of I don't remember what he called it. It was like a 3-foot window of focus. Well, actually, I think he might have called it a 6-foot window. And I was like, okay, I'm going to narrow that down to 3. And I had tunnel vision, basically, up this whole thing as I was going. I actually did not allow myself to look out and look around. And I know that there are going to be people out there like, what was even the point if you didn't see the view, etc. I totally get that. However, in my situation, what got me through was not letting the games of my mind play their tricks on me with putting myself up on a cliff above the water, like very exposed like we were. For me, I was on this really cool climb where I had to figure out the next step and where to grab and the handholds. And the puzzle part of it was so much fun for me. Like, I love that. I loved the strategy part, you know, like figuring out how am I going to get over this? They were overhanging. I mean, we were like Spider-Man up there. I mean, having to like take these big steps and haul ourselves up. And I mean, it was just figuring everything out was so, so cool. And if I allowed myself just this narrow part of vision, narrow vision, narrow focus, I mean, I saw a lot of the ferns that were growing on those rocks right in front of me, you know, and once I got to the top and actually pulled myself over, that is when I allowed myself to really turn around and look and see where I was and see where I had climbed up. Wow. Everyone else was looking the whole time and taking pictures. And you know what? We're on video now, which is cool. Like I'm doing these video podcasts now. I'm going to see if we can share some of these photos from, and maybe some video from the Via Ferrata right here on the video, because that bench that you were talking about, I sat on that bench.
Yeah, nice.
The only thing is I didn't look out because the bench is overhanging, right? And so I couldn't. So we have these amazing pictures of my four companions just pointing and laughing and loving what they're doing. And I'm like hiding against the rock in between them, just like, you know what? I'm here. I've gotten myself here. I deserve to be here. I just can't look that direction, you know, but I got myself through. And I think my biggest takeaways, I mean, sorry, this is a long-winded answer to your question, but my biggest takeaways are that when we get ourselves into hard situations, we're really the only people that can pull ourselves out. I mean, I couldn't rely. Yes, I had a top rope, but that guy wasn't going to move my carabiners for me along the cable. He wasn't going to actually use my muscles for me to pull me up and get me through this thing. And he certainly wasn't inside of my head or my heart being my courage. That was me, you know, and that shined that day big time. And it showed me that I can do hard things. And that's what I love about this. I just got chills because so often on my trips, I see other people saying these things because they accomplished that hike or that bike ride or whatever it is that was hard for them. And here I am on the other side thinking like, I hike all the time. I bike all the time. Like, I'm really happy for you. Like, that's amazing. But guess what? It's really nice to put ourselves into that position every now and then and remind ourselves that we can do hard things, you know? And even for me, it's just going to look different for everybody. And what is that thing for you? Like, I've definitely found what mine is. But the wild thing is that I did it. I climbed the highest sea cliff in Europe on a Via Ferrata. I did that. I did it. I never really used the rope. I know, right? Like, and that deserves a pat on the back. That deserves a hug. That deserves victory cookies. We had victory cookies at our lunch break. Like, I mean, we got to reward ourselves, right? But really, like, making the choice to put ourselves in that position, getting through it, figuring out whatever resources we could, harnessing all of that courage. It took everything I had to keep the fear at bay and to keep the courage strong, like to keep myself going. It took absolutely everything that I had to not freeze on that wall, especially during the overhanging parts when my muscles were feeling fatigued, when the wind picked up, when it started raining on our faces, and I'm out there thinking, no one is getting me through this but me. No one can pull me up to that next spot but me. I have to do this.
Yeah, no, I understand. I mean, that's also an exercise in those moments. It's like you could say a lot of things to yourself, right? You could say, why did I do this? Why did I choose to do this? This was dumb. Or you could say what you said to yourself there. I mean, you know, the self-talk thing is crazy. So that's a great story. Congratulations. And those are awesome, I think, actionable takeaways. I pulled out a few lessons from that story, if you don't mind me sharing, just as you were talking, I was jotting them down. And they were just great reminders for me. So I thought I would share them if it's okay.
Yeah.
The first thing that I just kind of noticed is that you didn't do this. This wasn't like an ego thing, right? This was I want to test myself thing. And that I just want to acknowledge that because you were there with a group that you were guiding as a part of your trip. You could have easily fallen into the category of, well, they see me as you said, they see me as this brave, adventurous girl. I have to step up. I have to be the leader. I have to show. But in actuality, you were scared and you were being vulnerable and letting that be. So you didn't do this from a place of ego. Let me show, you know, even though I'm scared, I'm going to do this anyway because I have to be the, I have to live up to my, you know, perceived image or whatever. You did it for yourself. And that's, I think, really important. Also, the support you mentioned, kind of getting the extra belay and things like that, where you're willing to ask for help. I think that's another important lesson. The small commitments you were making leading up to it, I think, can translate to any facet of life, right? Like, you know, what's somebody's listening right now? What's your version of buying the $5 gloves? You know?
Yeah.
The thing that you need to just kind of get you to the point of entry,
yes.
Right? You're just like, right. Now I haven't actually climbed anything yet, but I've put my rain jacket on, small commitment. I bought these gloves, small commitment. You've done all these things to set yourself up for, you know, instead of your mind playing tricks on you, you're playing tricks on your mind, which is something we have to do to kind of talk ourselves into doing things sometimes.
Right.
The small commitments. And I think the other thing was being in the moment when you were talking about seeing the small ferns. You know, okay, you didn't see the grand views on the ways. You saved that to the end. But those people didn't see the small ferns.
Yes. Can I tell a wee story about that real quick?
Yeah.
Because there was a fiddlehead that I mean, there were all sorts of plants happening in the rocks, but I got to a point where there was this tiny fiddlehead, which is it's like the unfurling of a fern, right? When a fern is growing, they call it a fiddlehead as the spiral. And when I was in New Zealand on my 40th birthday, my group that I was with gifted me a panamu, which is the green jade stone in New Zealand. And they gifted me the spiral. It's called koru. And it signifies new beginnings. And they gifted it to me because I was turning 40, new decade. Like, that's a special thing. A special tradition in New Zealand is to gift a panamu. And they chose the koru, the spiral, the unfurling, the fiddlehead of new life. And I saw this fiddlehead on this cliffside. And I thought, this is just for me. Like, this is the first one I've seen today. And here it is, hundreds of feet up this cliff, in the middle of this rock, just for me. Yeah. I bet nobody else saw it, you know, but I pointed it out. I was like, this one right here. Like, look at this. This is for me. And unless your face was 3 inches from the rock, you weren't going to see it.
Well, you were meant to see it. That was your, I don't know, maybe that was
a
rebirth
rewards.
Of sorts. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just from focusing. So anyway, those were a few of the things that I pulled out that I thought were worth mentioning. And then also the last thing was probably leading into your final takeaway was, I think it sounds to me like you were finding the joy in the moment along the way in terms of enjoying the puzzle. Yeah. Like you mentioned, enjoying the puzzling of kind of, so you weren't focusing on the fears so much that were surrounding you as you were, okay, well, let me find the joy in, you know, the puzzle part of this. There's like an aspect of this that I can really lock into and concentrate on. And sometimes it takes that to push through the greater fears, I think. You know, it's just like these small in the moment things that make the process enjoyable. When you step back and look at the overall process of something, it can be intimidating and there's so many scary parts and it's hard and you'll feel like a failure and all these things. But then you find this one piece in the process that you can do, and then you sort of find the next piece, and you know, it's a messy thing, this thing we call life, I guess. But it's a great, this Via Ferrata story is a great metaphor, I think, for a lot of things we experience in life. So yeah, thanks for sharing. That's awesome.
Definitely.
Thanks for letting me unpack it with you.
Yeah, thank you for helping that. I think what you said, you just nailed it. I was very focused on just one segment at a time, because when you climb a Via Ferrata, you don't do it all at once. When you run a marathon, you don't do it all at once. When you live a life, you don't do it all at once. You've got what's right in front of you, and that's really the only thing that's happening. And then when you get to the next segment, you can focus on that segment. But right now, I've just got to get through this one. I've got to get through these next few steps, pull myself up. I can get there, and then we'll worry about the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Congratulations. That's such a great accomplishment. Yeah. So I don't know. What is your litmus test for, and then I want to get into this destination question because I know we're getting to the end here, but you know, what is your litmus test in that moment when you're, okay, fine, you bought the rain jacket and you have the gloves and everything. You know, what's going through your head when you actually make the commitment for something like that? Because I've found, I have an imperfect one, but I want to hear yours.
Honestly, I did not know I could do it the whole time. I knew I was committing, but only, I mean, like when we got to the point where two people decided to turn around and I realized I was the only, well, besides the really excited people, I was the only one there that was feeling scared. I still wasn't sure, which is hard because I felt like it wasn't, it's like, yes, okay, am I committing to this? I was holding on to the what if I can. I was really holding on to that. So I'm not sure how to answer that litmus test question because the whole thing was a challenge to me. I mean, as soon as we started, the thing that was going through my head was, oh, what have I done? Where did they go? Can I catch up to them? Like, can I? I mean, because as soon as we started, it was like, it was 10 times harder the first segment we did than any of the approach. And my question was, is it going to be like this for the next 2 hours? I mean, I was starting to, the fear was starting to get me already. And so I don't even know how to answer that.
It's a tough question.
Well, what's yours?
Well, I mean, it's again, I said it's imperfect for a reason, because the first thing I think that happens with me is like, am I going to regret not doing this later? But thinking about that from the right perspective, and I think the wrong perspective is the ego perspective, and the right perspective might be from the personal journey that I will experience, like you laid out for this one.
Yeah.
Now, a specific example in Norway as well, we did this Lise Bolten hike, which was this rock that's wedged between the cliffs that I mentioned earlier, that's like suspended 1,000 feet over a long way over a fjord. And people will step out on this rock and get their picture taken. And you can see this rock is wedged. And I had never experienced my physical body unable to do something. You mentioned the freezing thing. I had never experienced it until this moment when first my buddy went out and I took his picture and he was out there. I'm like, all right, I'll go. And I could not bring my legs to go out on, because you had to make this sort of step. Nobody's ever fallen off it and died, but it can happen. So I kept telling myself, well, nobody's ever fallen. I kind of wanted to get up there to conquer my own fear, but even with that rationale, I just, like, my body wouldn't do it. And then I was being sort of hard on myself on the way down. I was just like, why couldn't I conquer my own fear? But I couldn't do it. And do I regret it? No, I have children to live for. Like, do I need to step out on a rock and be the one that die? So, like, you know, in the end, I was okay with it, but I still remember it. You know, I still remember kind of the, because there's that element of this too. Like, when you don't do the thing and you're disappointed in yourself dealing with that. I don't know why I was so disappointed in myself, because I know me in my earlier travels days would have done it, you know, but for some reason I just couldn't, my body wouldn't let me step out on that rock. And oh, well,
that's okay.
That's okay.
You know what? I did just tell you that was my fifth Via Ferrata. I have done this before. And I think that it's baby steps. I mean, I have put myself in that position, so at least I got to understand a little bit what it would feel like. This, again, was rated harder and scarier than all the other ones I had done before. But I knew that going in. So I knew kind of what I was up against, you know. Mm-hmm. I had been there many times in that freezing position, and I've also overcome it before. And I've also been on Via Ferratas that never made me feel that way, the ones that are rated easy. You know, it's like, oh, it's kind of like whitewater rafting with me. Like I now I have a limit where I do not go over, you know, because I've had I've had bad experiences, and I'm like, water is my other phobia, you know, and I know my limit and I won't cross that. I've tried a lot. This is the thing. You have to push yourself to where you feel okay. You know, like on the Via Ferrata, I knew I was safe. So I kept telling myself, like, I'm not actually going to fall. Okay. I'm not actually going to fall. Everyone else around me is having such a good time. I'm going to feed off of their energy. I'm going to feed off the fact that I know I'm not going to fall. I am not going to let myself go. Plus, I was roped in. right? I had that extra line of security. But it's really like, I think that it's within us to say it the first time. And maybe the first time you say, you know what, I can't do it. I'm not going to do it today. But Jason, like, you live in Norway. There's a chance you might go back to that rock. There's a chance that one day in 10 years when your kids are, you know, coming back to visit you from college, you all go up there and you're watching them go out there and you go out there with them, you know, like, but it doesn't have to all be at once. You can take it in baby steps until you're ready to go.
Yeah.
I mean, for some people, the adventure starts right in their own backyard because they're not ready for international yet, you know, like, and that's okay. And I mean, it's just that I've gotten myself there and I knew that that was my chance to do it. And I don't know when I'm going to be back here. I don't live in Norway. You know, it's like, am I going to regret not doing this tomorrow? It wasn't so much about that. It was more like, can I?
Right. No, I think it's great. And I kind of brought up I'm not even going to call it a failure, but my inability to step out on that rock, because there's lessons in that too, when you don't do the thing. And I was just like, you know, later on in the process, I'm like, that was okay. Like, I tried to face that fear of getting out on the rock. I just couldn't do it on that time, but mm-hmm. you forgive yourself, you yeah. move on. And that's a lesson
yeah.
too.
Right.
But I mean, do I really need to forgive? Like, so I didn't stand out on a
no.
rock, you know, I mean, who, you know, I mean, if you saw it, you would be like, oh yeah, okay. I understand why.
You had the experience for what it was worth to you,
yeah.
you know, and that matters. And every time, like, your courage muscles will grow a little more and you'll be more prepared for the next one. That's what it's about.
Yeah. But then these other litmus tests isn't really a litmus test. Sometimes my brain just says, F it, and turns everything off. And then I just do it. And then I go okay. into like robotic mode. And that's a whole other yeah. approach. But, you know,
going through the motions.
We won't get in. We won't get into that. But what we will get into are these three places that you'd like to spend 3 months or more, which I, you know, that's just a framework I made up before this chat. Only because I feel like that's a nice compliment to a destination. If you're like, yeah, I'd spend more than 3 months, 3 months or more in these places, then you're saying, okay, that has like a certain stamp of approval. And so if you're listening and you're a slow traveler, or you want to slow travel, perhaps you will steal some of these.
Yeah. This is actually how I love to travel. I've done this a lot over the years. When I travel, I look for places that I feel like I could live. It's not even
a natural traveler tendency.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I could live here.
I don't need
to come back here.
What would it be like to live here? Huh?
Yeah. So I do. I've been thinking about this, and I do have a few places. The first one, I don't know if any of these are going to come as a surprise, but here we go. Baja. So the Baja Peninsula of Mexico.
Nice.
I absolutely love Baja, which is amazing because the first time I went, I wasn't so enamored. But the second time I went, it completely changed my life. Again, like giving it a second chance sort of thing. Like you can't tell everything by the first try. But Baja for sure. I love the laid back lifestyle. We're talking north of Cabo. So I lived in Loreto actually for a few months and I would absolutely go back there. La Paz is also a really cool place. Cabo is not for me. But there are a lot of places on the Baja Peninsula that are so cool. Amazing food, affordable, sunny, especially in winter, you know, for the girl who likes to get out for a few months during the cold winter months up north. Baja is a really good choice. Number two is another place that I have lived for 3 months is Bariloche, Argentina. So that's in Patagonia, but it's in northern Patagonia on the Argentina side. And I did spend a few months living there on Lake Nahuelhuapi, it's called. There's trails, mountains. I mean, the thing I missed the most when I lived there was all of my toys. Like, I wished I had my sup and my tent, my sleeping bag and like my bike and like all the gear. I wish I had my truck there with me. So I would recommend that place with toys. But Bariloche was good. The Wi-Fi, not so much. So maybe digital nomads think twice, because Wi-Fi in Argentina is kind of like ghost Wi-Fi. And the last one is a place I will be going for a few months. I have not done it yet, but it's New Zealand. And I don't have specific... Yeah. I mean, who's surprised, right? We're saying this in it's June of 2025. I am planning on going back there this coming winter for a few months because it's, you know, opposite seasons. So let's fly south for the winter, as this snowbird likes to do. And I don't know exactly the place yet. I only, you know, just went to New Zealand for the first time in November, December of last year, and absolutely blew my mind, fell in love, like, think it changed my life. So we'll see what happens there. But I do plan on spending a few months there. And that's, I mean, all of these places you can go for 3 months. Like, that's what we get legally without having to deal with any visa issue whatsoever. And so, yeah, I'm going to go see what I can find, any what this feeling is that has just completely consumed me of what's going on in New Zealand. There's something there, and I gotta go find out what it is. So
gotta go find out. That's what you gotta do as a traveler. Bariloche is an awesome place. I know there's somebody probably still there that has a digital camera full of a couple months, month and a half at least, pictures. I got my camera swiped from an internet cafe there. Oh, so yeah, if you're ever in an internet cafe, which they're not really a thing anymore, I don't think, don't put your backpack next to your leg and not put it through the loop, because somebody crawled under, took my entire backpack with all my pictures. Anyway, that's not a vote against Bariloche, because it is an incredible place to base and have adventures. I second that.
They call it the Switzerland of Argentina. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks,
Jackie.
I'm
drawn to these beautiful places of blue waters and big mountains, and this is why Norway was on my list anyway. So, well, coming full circle.
I hope the price of beer didn't scare you off from coming back, but we'll see.
It might have. I've never been to a more expensive place. I don't know how you guys.
Well, but it's different when you're traveling. It's depending on how you're traveling, but
and it's still worth it. Absolutely.
Well, I appreciate.
Thank you for helping me have this conversation.
Thank you. I mean, thanks for giving me the honor of having it with you. I hope that were we able to unpack everything you wanted to unpack there, or?
I mean, I think we could have gone on and on and on, but, you know, for the sake of time, we can we can say, yeah, I think we did a good job with it. So, no, I appreciate it.
Cool.
And as a reminder, where can people find you?
Zero to Travel. Wherever you're listening to podcasts, if you just search that, no numbers, just all letters spelled out, Zero to Travel, any of the apps, Spotify, whatever, zerototravel.com. You can find, we have a free newsletter and all that good stuff. And of course, yeah, the podcast. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. And if you guys want to come say hi on Instagram, you can. I'm at Traveling Jackie, and, yeah, it's my only social media platform at the moment. But also check out this episode on YouTube, because I'm on YouTube now. We're doing these video episodes. You can see Jason's pretty face and my 5:30 a.m. face in Montana if you watch the video. So yeah,
at Zero to Travel. If you guys listen to this and you want to tag us both, we'd love to hear your feedback on the episode.
Yeah, definitely. Always. Cool. Well, we'll catch you guys next time. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you.